Welcome back for another episode of Brothers in Song. We thank all of our listeners for their patience as we needed a little bit of extra time to get this episode out since I finally had my first bout with COVID and I'm feeling much better now. Joe, how are you feeling?
I feel fantastic.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
I'm getting back in the fighting shape. I feel good. It was a little bit of a break, but that's all right because I think we rejoin our listening friends with quite an interesting episode this evening.
Yes, I would agree with that. And before we get started on the episode, my question for you, Joe, is are there any obscure artists or pieces of music that you were able to discover with the help of a friend? And perhaps you would not have been introduced to the music if a friend or someone you know didn't bring it to your attention.
Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, I just like to say, I want to state for the record, this is very much a leading question because the whole premises of this podcast is you introducing me to new music.
Well, but you've done the same for
You're like, what's the phrase? You're stacking the deck with this question.
I didn't think I was. Wasn't trying to, you know, toot my own horn or give myself extra credit or whatever.
Well, you certainly have done that with quite a bit of things on this show, for sure. So that's the obvious answer. But for some honorable mentions, it was a lot of teachers and professors that I worked with throughout my musical training that started me getting me exposed to that sort of music because I certainly wasn't so versed in it when I first started out. And I remember one of the first voice teachers I had, I was preparing for something and I was doing this Refn Williams piece. And she was like, you know, you really need to listen to this recording of it. And it was by this like 20 something year old Welsh baritone. Cause of course he would have been on my radar when I was 15. But his name is Bryn Terfel. And, I'm sure we've talked about him maybe in passing on this show, but he's just a great singer. So that's one certainly stuck in my memory because I do remember hearing him for the first time being very impressed. And then I think when I got to college, I was in a music school that had a lot of music theater students as well as classical students. And I always remember when people would be picking out repertoire, of course, there was the classics, but then they would pull out like things that I certainly was never familiar with. The first Jonathan Larson musical, Tick, Tick, Boom, which is pretty well known now, but certainly wasn't 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And somebody who, you know, grew up on Rent definitely was not aware of it. So that was a cool one. And then I think, I'm pretty sure I have the timing right on this, but people started singing stuff from Wicked as it like first came out in like college, which I was like, oh, wow, didn't know about that. So it was always interesting going to see peer recitals and concerts because you think you know all the repertoire and then somebody pulls out something out of left field and you're like, wow, that's a pretty cool piece. So that's where I think a lot of my unexpected music influences came from, beyond the obvious choice. What about you? Because I know that you've had lots of folks in and out of your life that have influenced your musical taste.
Yeah, usually there was a girlfriend involved somewhere along the way sharing music with me. I mean, some of these aren't so obscure, but I don't think I would have known about Bjork, for example, or Radiohead, or Pixies, or PJ Harvey, without those people, you know, bringing those artists to my attention, because I think they are well known at this point among music nerds, but they're not the kind of artists that you know, typically had stuff on the radio, like not even on supposed alternative rock radio. And since our parents had this thing about not wanting us to watch MTV either, those were definitely some that I'm not so sure I would have encountered at the right time if they weren't brought to my attention by those people. So, and the subject of today's episode is another one of those. A friend of mine brought this artist to my attention. They kept telling me to listen to Perfume Genius. And then when I finally did, I was really impressed. And I was like, I think this is something that Joe would be interested in. So so that's why we're talking about this today. And we do like to talk about some artists that are maybe more well known, but we haven't done our homework to listen to. But in this case, this one's pretty obscure, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, when you told me this was on your list, I was like, I don't know what that is or who that is. So, okay, let's take it for a spin.
Yeah, for sure. The album in question here is called Too Bright. It's the third studio album by Perfume Genius, whose birth name is Michael Hadrius. Mm-hmm. It was released in 2014. And this is one of those albums that is highly praised by the music press, and Perfume Genius is an artist with a loyal following, just not well known to most people. Quick bit of background on this album. The lyrical themes of the album revolve around Hadrius's experiences grappling with his identity as a gay man. And I think that the music here is meant to reflect that struggle as well. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that in just a moment, because it's definitely not an easy listening album. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while it is pretty in parts, the music can be a bit disorienting. And, you know, I wanted to listen to it because I was really impressed with the artistry and kind of the fearless nature and ambition of the production and composition of the album. So what did you think of it, Joe? Because, well, I thought you would enjoy it, but who knows?
Certainly, I appreciated it, and I definitely enjoyed several of the tracks, which we'll get into. I guess for me, the one thing that was a little bit challenging is that it's so subtle in many instances. It can very easily fade into sort of background music and not really grab your attention. But with all that being said, I did find it to be a really almost cinematic, and maybe this is a result of it kind of fading into the background, because as I was listening to the tracks, and they're very distinctive from one another, I kept thinking about, oh, this could be like the background music in an HBO drama, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as something's about to happen. And like, I was like trying to go through an exercise of like, oh, well, this would be like this kind of show, or this would be like for this kind of moment. Mm-hmm. I didn't quite get all the way there, but there's definitely a lot of that. Which I think is kind of cool. But then the music itself and the emotion and the experiences that he's conveying through it, I think it works really well. It's really dense and precise. And it's what, maybe 30 minutes, 33 minutes or something in total? Mm-hmm. So you kind of get to go to a lot of different places on that quick little journey. But I definitely appreciated it, and it was certainly new to me. What were your initial impressions of this one?
Yeah, I think your comments are pretty interesting. And it's funny because I believe all of the songs are well under 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's a very short album, especially by today's standards, but it goes so many places and it's so dense with musical ideas that it feels bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that drew me to it when I first listened to it is that it's full of surprises. There are a few songs that start off with pretty conventional chord progressions, mm-hmm. and maybe veer into like pop territory a little bit. But instead of following a conventional path with the flow of the song, they meander away from that. Mm-hmm. They travel down some dark hallway. And then sometimes they come back to the original idea and other times they don't. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate the way that he's allowing himself to just follow where those ideas take him without any regard for any kind of like audience expectations.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, there's a little bit of formal structure to this, but then it also sort of does its own exploratory thing, which makes it that's, I think, the element of it for me that makes it difficult to really stay with it if you're not paying close attention as you're listening.
Right. And before we started recording here, I'd mentioned to you that to me, it has a connection to classical music, you know, maybe not in a formal way, but in like a feeling way, in like mm-hmm. an atmospheric way. And there's times where this feels like a song cycle,
mm-hmm.
you know, all these separate ideas that are kind of like coming together to form this work. And also, if you've ever listened to or tried to listen to any classical music in your car, especially orchestral music, there's such a huge breadth in terms of dynamics, you know, from very quiet, subtle things to bigger moments. And this is not the kind of album, you know, much like that classical music, that is going to make a good impression on you while listening in your car, for example.
Mm-hmm. I think your comments are exactly right. It certainly has that structure of a song cycle where you explore all these different elements, but then they are all linked together. Through musical themes, through metaphorical themes, through poetic themes. And it certainly has that aspect of it. But the thing when you're listening to classical music is you either really need to know it very well, and so you can kind of passively listen to it, because then you know where the mile markers are to know mm-hmm. where you are in a particular piece. And I feel like I certainly could get there with this album if I just listened to it enough. Mm-hmm. And it would be one where I think I would listen to the whole thing together. I think it would be a little bit odd to kind of pull one or two of these out and just like put them in a playlist. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's maybe a couple you could do that with.
Yeah.
But there are a few that when taken out of context, you'd be like, oh, what a weird little thing that is, yeah. you know?
Yeah.
But then within the context of all the other songs, they feel like they belong, you know?
Yeah. Before we get into the specifics, I just want to make one more like overarching comment, because I'd like to get your reaction to this. So we mentioned a lot about, you know, having some pop elements, certainly some classical musical elements with both the orchestration and the way that it feels when you listen to it. And even I think his vocal quality, here's a take for you, and I want to hear what you think. Is this Rufus Wainwright 2.0?
You know, I did think about that, and you know, I feel like in one respect that comparison is easy to make, like, on a superficial level, because we're talking about, like, we're talking about two gay men who, you know, and this entire album is about
that experience.
Yeah. And Rufus Wainwright does speak to that experience sometimes, although not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would be impossible for someone of, you know, Michael Hadris's age, and, like, considering the type of music that he's making, for him not to be aware of Rufus Wainwright and,
yes,
like, and have that influence him in some way, you mm-hmm. would think.
I think that's fair to say, for sure.
Yeah, it's like Rufus Wainwright without some of his more poppy elements, because
mm-hmm.
Rufus Wainwright can write a straight up, you know, pop tune.
Oh yeah.
And this has a little bit of it, but then it rejects it immediately. But yeah, let's talk about some of the specific songs. Are there any that you want to talk about first?
Too Bright was interesting, the title track, and it's I think the second to last track of the whole album. And I liked elements of it. Specifically, I think it's the end of the first verse. There's this, like, really low string element to it, and it kind of, like, sinks you back down. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of a cappella singing in towards probably, like, 75% of the way through the song, which I think is really great at setting up sort of this big ending with this, like, vocal line that's kind of floating above all the other noise that's coming through. So I see why that one is the title track. I see why it's been used in other pieces of art. I think it certainly is a powerful piece. Queen, I think, is fun, and probably the best use of the word sachet ever is that's a fun one, and that's probably about as poppy as it gets. And that's probably one of the reasons why you're like, oh, I bet you Joe can get on board with this one. And then I think this might be a little bit of a, maybe surprise you a little bit, but Grid, I thought, was pretty cool. That might have been my favorite one.
I'm surprised that that's your favorite one, but that is a cool song. It definitely has some interesting rhythmical elements to it that all get, you know, layered on top of one another. And then, like, there's this totally odd but totally works, like, sing-songy thing that happens with, like, a group of kids.
It took me a while. I had to, like, go back and listen to that a bunch of times to figure out, like, what was going on. I thought that was really creative, just all because of all the reasons you just mentioned, and that one kind of stuck with me. I'm like, oh yeah, like, as we listen to these things several times, like, when that one comes on, you're like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. What about you? What are a couple that stuck out for you in a positive way?
Well, other than the ones you mentioned, I like the song Fool. I think the composition of that song is great, and it's a perfect example of this album subverting expectations, because it starts off with, like, a relatively catchy mid-tempo, like, pop beat, and it even uses, like, finger snaps as the kind of anchoring percussion of it. When the first verse is over, you expect some type of chorus to come in, but instead it transitions to this amorphous, like, atmospheric organ section, where he's just kind of, like, vocalizing above it, and it's, like, a good, I would say, one third of the song.
Yeah,
in the middle.
Yeah, it's a good chunk. Yeah,
because he takes his time, like, letting that develop,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes back to the catchier section that it had at the beginning. That's a song about feeling conflicted about his behavior fulfilling some gay stereotypes and maybe feeling some shame around that, and hence the title Fool. But what I found interesting lyrically about that one is that even though the word fool is not uttered in any of the lyrics, many of the lines contain the same vowel sound as the word fool. Like all the rhymes in the song, for example, are cartoon, room, move, flute, plume. And that's got to be intentional.
It's
like you finish the song thinking that he's said fool somewhere in there, but he hasn't at all.
Yeah. Well, I missed that. I didn't get it. I didn't listen to it quite that closely, but that's a good catch.
Yeah. And then other than that, I think the song Don't Let Them In is really great. And I think that's another one. I wouldn't call it poppy exactly, but it's a very pretty ballad. And it contains some really heartbreaking lyrics about, you know, wanting to be accepted, but choosing to not let people in because you don't want others to see you as different, even if those people's intentions are good. It just left me feeling just like very like melancholy. It's just like this kind of mournful song about like being an outsider. And I thought that one was really well done as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I have one in particular that I was really struggling with. But before we talk about that, I just want to ask, were there any ones for you that you really didn't care for or likely to skip on several of your listening experiences?
I have the distinct feeling that we're going to name the same song.
All right. Do you want to do it on the count of three?
Sure, yeah. Okay.
One,
two, three.
I'm a mother.
There you go. Yeah, I'm a mother. There you go. Yep. I mean, do you want to start first about like why that one wasn't really working for you?
It's like, for me, it's like you're in a sensory deprivation tank, but yeah. It's not like the calming sense. It's just like a panicky sense.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I just, it just didn't work for me.
Yeah. That's a really good way of describing it. And, you know, I know the intent is to induce this uncomfortable atmosphere.
Obviously. Yeah, right.
And has these, it's really slow and it uses these like creepy sounding chords. And I think that probably would have been enough to have the desired effect. And God knows I appreciate plenty of music that's ominous and uncomfortable to listen to. But I just found the effect that he was using on his voice for that song to be too distracting. Yeah, so I feel like I'm skipping that one 9 times out of 10. And on the 10th one, I listened to it because I forgot about it. I was like, why do I not listen to this? And then like you try it again, and you're just like, no, though. I don't want to say it doesn't work because I think it is
doing what it's trying to do. I think.
Yes, it's serving the purpose that it wants to serve. But one time through is enough for me. And I don't think that there's enough other interesting things happening within that to listen to it again. Because there's other songs that are just like totally weird and out there, but they have enough interesting things happening where you want to listen to it and kind of like wrap your head around it, you know?
Sure. Well, and I think, you know, when I said, well, it's doing what it's trying to do, well, it's trying to, in some small way for, you know, I guess, what is it? About 3 minutes, that song?
Yeah.
It's trying to make you feel the discomfort that a lot of people experience every day just by being who they are.
Right, right.
And just want to reiterate, it's doing what it's supposed to do. but I don't necessarily want to listen to it all the time, I guess.
Right. And I mean, there's plenty of art that's like that, right? Art and music and movies, whatever you want to say, is not there to just like make you feel happy all the time.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, God knows there's plenty of movies that are like that where you're just like, okay, that's really well done. I'm glad that I watched that, but I really don't want to see that again, or like not for a while. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I could name a couple of examples, of course, but I think that'll send us down a rabbit hole. but I think we can all think of a movie where you're just like, oh, that's really well done, and I'm glad I watched it, and I'm going to tell other people to watch it, but I'm not going to like sit home on a Saturday night and watch it again.
Yeah. But, so that was sort of my only, I guess, non-positive comment I wanted to make about the specific tracks. I would like to hear what you thought of his voice, because it's quite interesting to listen to, and he does a lot of different things with it.
Yes, and I think that he's... I think he has a good singing voice, but I also think that he's using his voice like a tool. Okay, and I'll explain what I mean. Like, there... In trying to, you know, convey discomfort or induce discomfort or, you know, evoke some kind of an emotion. Like, I think he's pretty good at that. And he's not afraid to just not sing in a conventionally pleasing way to do that. So, for example, in the song My Body, he's, you know, he's really kind of just like grappling with identity in that song. And he has these like killer lines where he says, I wear my body like a rotted peach. You can have it if you can handle the stink. And he's like seething and like kind of like, and snarling, but also like singing in falsetto as he's singing those lines. And he's really like chewing the scenery when he sings that. And I think that's an effective use of his voice in a way that you can be like, quote unquote, not pretty to get your message across. I don't know. What did you think of his singing?
I think your description of it, using it as a tool, I would say tool/instrument in a very specific way, because there is quite a bit of instrumentation throughout this album, and it's very intentional and specific. And I think he just has his voices and another element to that process. But I found that when it was much more straightforward and some of the quieter sections, that was the most compelling to me. That leads me to another question, which I'm curious of what, if you know anything about this or what your thoughts are. It would be interesting to see this perform live, him perform live just generally, but then like thinking about like, would you do this? How would you do anything from this? Would you take maybe Queen and Too Bright and do those, because those are probably two of the better known pieces? Because I would think like if you did this, like you would just be done after this. You like would not want to be doing anything else.
Yeah, it would be really cool to see, you know, just this performed, and maybe have like some some stage elements or like some interpretive dancing or something going on while it's being performed. The live performances I found from this time period were him singing Queen, you know, on like Conan O'Brien or whatever.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live, whatever.
And you know, and it was good. It was perfectly good. But it, you know, I don't think it has the same power unless you pulled it all together. It's just one of those things. And we keep kind of encountering albums that are like that.
For sure. For sure. Any other little elements that we didn't touch on that you just wanted to mention?
Not really, like other than, you know, the final thought of, you know, I'm going to start being the one to recommend to other people, whoever will listen to me. There's not many of those, but you know, to recommend this obscure and kind of wonderfully odd and well-crafted, you know, gem of an album to people I know who will listen to it. And you know, I definitely want to get into the rest of his catalog, because from, you know, from whatever my friend told me about it or whatever I've read about it in preparing for this podcast, it's like this is kind of like, you know, this is a, you know, a focused, purposeful piece of work. And, you know, sometimes albums are just a collection of songs that a person has put together over a period of time, which is totally fine, but I would like to experience the, you know, the difference between those two. And, you know, if this is any indication, then, you know, then I'm a fan, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Not every album needs to be a concept album, as we like to touch upon. Like, it could just be a bunch of really well-written songs that kind of fit well together. That's totally fine. I have like one tiny thing I just want to mention, and then I'll give you my final thought. And we didn't talk about it at all, so I just wanted to mention it. I Decline, the opening track, is like the best fuck off song I've heard in a while. And it's kind of a fun way to start the album at any rate. But my final thought is, I thought this was really interesting and something totally unexpected, because, well, I didn't really expect anything, so I guess anything would have been unexpected. But I appreciated it. I think it was very well put together. Obviously, a lot of careful thought went into it, and I appreciated for it for what it was trying to do and how it was sharing the experience of one individual that could resonate with any variety of different types of people. So that's a pretty cool thing to be able to do as an artist. So credit to Perfume Genius on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is your pick for next time, Joe. What are we going to be doing?
So I'll use this phrase because I think it's easy for everybody. Everybody has a reference point, they'll get it, but I don't really actually like it. But we're going to be having a discussion about our guilty pleasures in our listening adventures. Folks, you should listen to whatever you want to listen to, and you shouldn't feel guilty about any of it. So it's like fun, love, and listening, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I think sometimes, you know, and we'll get more into the meaning of this when we actually do the show. I don't think I'm stealing our thunder too much. But I think like guilty pleasures mean different things depending on where you're coming from. You know, like if you're a classical musician and you like to listen to Madonna and she's one of your favorites, it's like, well, maybe that's a guilty pleasure because maybe you feel like a little embarrassed to talk about that with your colleagues. it all depends on your point of view. We thank you once again for your patience. This is a labor of love for us, so we kind of do this when we can, and we haven't been able to for a little while, but we're back on track, and we will see you next time.
See you later.
Brothers in Song is written and produced by Joseph Collin and Daniel Collin, and edited by Daniel Collin. To keep up with the latest news, follow us on Instagram at Brothers in Song. Until next time, listen to some new music. You just may surprise yourself.